The adventures of his 20s had taught Pete Barrall that it is unwise to begin with a lie. He slipped out of the premises of Barrall & Co. and moved discreetly through the crowds, giving no indication of haste, but nevertheless moving swiftly. He had taken the precaution of avoiding his creditors' bailiffs, who were at that moment disembarking from the omnibus outside the front entrance. He walked towards the company gardens, holding his nerve against desperation. Pete had told his lie boldly at the Mount Nelson Hotel in Cape Town on a blazing day in 1908. It was an embellishment of an untruth concocted by another, an American woman named Stacy, who was now his wife and the mother of his child. This lady exercised over Pete a dominion no one had achieved before her, for his was an independent spirit. She was seldom from his thoughts, and on this particular morning, he could think of nothing else. It was Stacy who had suggested, moments after their arrival in Africa, that they introduce themselves as the Baron and Baroness Pierre de Barrall, and Pete, who had upgraded Baron to Vicomte. He had enjoyed this fiction enormously at the start. His French mother had given him the polished manners of that country, and he loved watching Stacy dazzle the credulous audience of colonial Cape Town. She had a genius for mimicry, and they spent hours crying with laughter. They laughed so much that for months, Pete did not appreciate the price of his enormous lie. He was Dutch, not French, and far from aristocratic. The necessity of devising a fictional past made intimate friendship impossible. His numerous acquaintances knew nothing of his real circumstances and were inclined to be envious or bashful in his presence. For the first time in his life, he had no true friends. He walked up Adderley Street, doffing his hat at every store. He was a favourite of the neighbourhood. With the exception of two rival furniture makers, whose business had suffered considerably since his arrival at the Cape Colony, he was well liked by his fellows in the Chamber of Commerce, whose wives had sleepless nights after asking his wife to lunch. It was thought rather good of Pete that he should stand so little on ceremony. More than one competitive masculine spirit had been soothed by Pete's sincere desire to see the best in them. In a land where the aristocrats of Europe had the social sanctity of deities, a French vicomte who lunched in public with tradesmen was thought of very well by them. For several years, while early success bore him on, it had given Pete pleasure to see the ripple of deference that spread out from his wife when she entered a room. Self-confidence had hidden from him the dwindling of his capital. Circumstances now obliged him to confront it. No one, least of all the rich, troubles to pay bills on time to men who give no appearance of needing money. Stacy's deftly delivered tales of her father's railroad fortune and the Chateau de Barrall on the banks of the Loire River meant that debts to the Barrolls did not feature prominently in the consciences of their neighbours. Pete had many more outstanding invoices than he had the energy to pursue. His languid approach to debt collection had solidified into an impassivity that bound him so strongly he often woke in the night, struggling to breathe. It was unfortunate that those to whom he owed money did not show similar restraint. He drank an iced coffee in a cafe and read the papers for an hour, then went back to his shop. He was met by the fragranced air, the impression of delights within, that made Barrall & Co. one of the best patronised emporia in the city. Pete had long since had to let his white staff go, since they demanded salaries he could not rise to. But he had made a virtue of necessity and trained his African employees in the highest traditions of European service. These he had been privileged to observe, as a younger man, in the household of the best hotelier in Europe. When an assistant at Barrall & Co. asked a client if they might be of service, and bowed and made eye contact, and then smiled as they extolled the comfort of a chair or the perfection of a stool, they did so quite as well as any shop assistant anywhere in the world. For many years, Pete's habit of treating his staff as if they were men and women whose lives were at least as important as his own a habit that differed sharply from the attitude of all but the rarest white men, had inspired in those who worked for him a passionate devotion that had kept them loyal long after their salary payments ceased to be very regular. It was unfortunate, thought Pete, as he caught the expression on his manager's face, that loyalty cannot feed a large family. She was a descendant of high-born Malays, whose innate nobility set even the richest of his patrons at ease. He knew that losing her would be a loss he might not sustain, not only to his business, but to his spirits. For this reason, he made no great hurry to open the envelope she put in his hand, lips pursed, restraining the tears that would have been unacceptable on the shop floor. He took it to his office, a handsome room at the back of the shop, furnished with pieces of which he was especially proud. Every wooden object in it was made to his own design by the master craftsman he had been sensible enough to lure from his competitors. Pete sat at his desk, looking at the envelope. He thought of the child he had made with Stacy, a boy named Arthur, who seemed only to walk in dappled sunshine, who had inherited his father's love for the world and all that was in it. He felt unbearably sad.